This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Hello, this is Simon Mayo, and we have an extra Kermode podcast for you this week. Such joy. David Cronenberg was my guest on Thursday, and we talked about his new movie, Eastern Promises, which stars Viggo Mortensen, and a certain film critic decided to butt in as well. Hello, David.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And who's that strange man next to you?
I have no idea. He walked in off the street, and he looks kind of sketchy to me.
He looks very sketchy to most people. Hello, sketchy man.
Hello, Simon. How are you?
Oh, it's you.
No, of course. So who did you expect?
What's the good doctor doing next to Mr. Cronenberg?
Well, because, you know, you said I had an opportunity to come and talk to him about Eastern Promises, and you may remember about a couple of years ago when History of Violence came out, and I said, not only is this clearly the best film of the year, which it is, and incidentally should have won the Best Film Oscar 2 years ago, and you were sorely over that. Also,
this
said,
is all true, David, by the way. I can vouch for the fact that he did say all of this and more at great length.
You can check it. You can download it. Why would I make this stuff up?
Mr. Cronenberg is not going to check it and download it, is he? He's busy.
No, I have people who do that for me. Excellent. Kind of. They're Russian, actually.
Yes, exactly, and they're very, you know, they pick up on mistakes. So anyway, it was just a great thrill to be able to come and talk about Eastern Promises, which is here. It's playing at the London Film Festival, and I think it, you know, is it just a terrific new addition to the already magnificent David Cronenberg. Oof.
It's not oof.
No, you know, I can't say
that's
oof.
That's the English pronunciation. It's, if you call Beaulieu Beaulieu, then oeuvre could be oof.
I live very near to a place that's called Beaulieu, and we pronounce it Beaulieu, thank you very much.
I know. And I know that well.
And it's marvellous to be corrected on my pronunciation by a Canadian.
Yes, well, you know, we are bilingual in Canada now. Of course, the other language is not French, it's Quebecois. It's quite different.
I have to say, David, also, the other thing that that the good doctor there next to you went on, I'd say that because he is a proper doctor, went on and on and on about is that Viggo Mortensen is the new Robert De Niro.
Well, I think he's the old Viggo Mortensen, but I understand the comparison. I mean, certainly Scorsese and De Niro made a series of wonderful films together. Viggo and I are a little advanced in age to sort of match that. I don't think we'll have the time, really, to make as many movies together. But I'd love him to be in every movie I make, I have to say. He's just an undiscovered treasure. I guess he's discovered now, but he's a magnificent actor. He's really superb.
The undiscovered thing, I think, is the crucial element, because I remember when History of Violence came out, and of course the extraordinary thing about History of Violence is it centers on a character being something that they may not be. You don't know whether they're one person or another person. It appears to them they're not even sure who they are. And I know several people were really knocked out by just how nuanced Mortensen's performance was in that film. And actually, that was the point at which I said, and not in any ironic sense, he is the new De Niro, in as much as I had never seen somebody do such a complex character so almost completely, totally. And at the time, people said, well, he's great and he looks really handsome, but can he really, really be that good? But I think History of Violence did prove to people just what a versatile performer he was.
Well, I love to hear you say that. I really thought it was so subtle that it kind of hurt him when you talk about Oscars and things like that. Those who have been raised on sort of the recent Jack Nicholson type performances perhaps don't understand what subtlety is, but it's real performing. I mean, it's real acting.
And of course, what we get in Eastern Promises is once again we get a starring role from Viggo Mortensen as a character who, when we first meet him, appears to be one thing, and yet during the course of the drama, we discover that he may be several other things.
That's right.
And again, it's a central question of identity. Just to explain this to the viewers who haven't seen the film yet.
That's listeners, Mark. That's listeners.
What did I say?
Viewers.
Yeah, it's because there's somebody sitting here with a podcast camera. It's really kind of complicated.
At some stage in the future,
if you will, multimedia platform for me. David, explain for us basically the setup of Eastern Promises.
Yeah. Well, Naomi Watts is a midwife who works at a large central London hospital. She delivers a baby from a young Russian girl who has obviously been a sex slave. And in tracking down the background of the girl and the baby, she runs into some sketchy characters, to use that word again, who happen to be Russian and Eastern European, and gets involved with them in some very interesting ways. And one of them is Nikolai, who is played by Viggo Mortensen, who appears at first to just be a driver, a chauffeur, for the boss's son, who is played by Vincent Cassel, a French actor.
Can you explain? Excuse me, interrupting there, Mark. Can you explain, David, why you chose to set this in London? Why is this a London story?
Well, it really was Steve Knight, the writer's decision to do that, and he knows London very well. He wrote Dirty Pretty Things for Stephen Frears, which also dealt with sort of subcultures within London, in that case African and Turkish, in this case Eastern European. And it really is the London version of multiculturalism. Certainly my hometown of Toronto prides itself on also on being multicultural, and that is in opposition to the American theory of the melting pot, where you come to America but you give up your heritage, your national heritage, to take on American values and become American. Multiculturalism, the idea is that you're able to keep your religion, your language, your food, your dress, and still somehow participate in the umbrella culture, which in this case is English. And you could do a multicultural story in Toronto, and really you could do it in New York or Paris as well. But this is a very specifically London version of that. I mean, the characters do speak English. They speak English with accents, but their lingua franca, the one language they all understand, is English. So that's part of why it's a very English story.
And this criminal brotherhood that we're wrapped up in, tell us about that, David.
Well, it's called the Vorivis Econi. It means literally thieves in law. It's a brotherhood of thieves. In fact, in Russia, it's probably quite passé now, because since the fall of the Soviet Union, there's been an emergence of a whole new criminal class who are quite different. There's a brilliant documentary called The Mark of Cain that Viggo Mortensen, in fact, found for us, which was shot in maximum security Russian prisons. And in that, we hear the prisoners talk about their life as thieves, having given up their lives to belong to this brotherhood, and how tattooing of their life story on their body becomes their passport and their identification, the crimes they've committed, where they've served time, and so on. But at the end of that documentary, there's a lament by a very old, well into his 70s anyway, Russian criminal who says, you know, the new criminals these days, they don't know what the tattoos stand for. They don't understand the meaning. They'll just tattoo anything on their bodies for fashion. All they're interested in is money. They don't have any loyalty to the brotherhood. It's a kind of classical generational lament. But in this case, I think it's indicative of the fact that perhaps only in a transplanted form, as in coming to London, does this thieves' brotherhood exist. And it's probably been pretty much supplanted in Russia itself by, as I say, the new kind of capitalist criminal thieves.
Email over here from Diddy, I think this is in Edinburgh, says, Simon, I was lucky enough to be able to fly out to the Toronto Film Festival and see both screenings of Eastern Promises. It is an amazingly good film. Viggo Mortensen plays the character of Nikolai perfectly, as were Vincent Cassell as Kirill and Amin Muller-Stahl as Semyon, who was just fantastic. The bathhouse scene has to seem to be believed, but my absolute favourite scene was the birthday party with the singer serenading the old lady and all her friends joining in. Just explain, Mark, what's happening in that scene.
Well, can we talk about that? Or can we talk about the... You talk about that, and then I'm going to talk to you about the bathhouse scene.
Okay. Yeah, it was really lovely. I mean, it was meant to be a sort of an incidental scene showing some of the non-criminal activity of Russians living in London, and they're in a Russian restaurant, which is meant to sort of bring Russia back to Russians who live in London and who miss Russia. And it's a bunch of very old ladies celebrating the birthday of a woman who's 100 years old, and there's an accordion player who plays Orchichornia, which means dark eyes, a very traditional Russian-Ukrainian song. As he sings it, though, all the old ladies start to sing with him, and they put their hands over their hearts and all lean towards the birthday girl, who, as I say, is 100 years old. Now, when we got Russian extras to play those ladies, and I had no idea that they would sing. I mean, it was not in my intention. I thought that he would just play the accordion and sing, and it was set up the way they would do that birthday party. And they all started to sing, and it was a very touching, wonderful moment. And then at the end of it, it's all done in just one shot that moves on. There's a sort of a criminal plot moment that occurs at the end of that. And the Russian performer who played the accordion is very well known in London, Igor Utkin, and he's a wonderful singer and a very interesting-looking character. Beautiful performance and just a lovely, touching moment in the film, which, as I say, was one of those wonderful moments of happenstance in a movie.
Now's your moment, Mark.
Oh, it's just, well, it's a fantastic scene. The thing that has caused controversy, or has attracted people's attention, is the bathhouse sequence, which there is an extraordinary bathhouse showdown in which Viggo Mortensen's character fights for his life, and he does so naked because he's in a bathhouse, which is how you would be in it. And I wrote something about it, comparing it to the scene of Oliver Reed and Alan Bates wrestling in Ken Russell's Women in Love, which it drew my attention to. The fact that it's so fleshy, and as people who know Cronenberg's work, will know, the great call to arms was "Long live the new flesh," and he has his entire body story written on his body and performs these tattoos. People are already comparing it to like the Psycho shower scene and saying it's the thing that everyone will remember. Tell us a little bit about that, because it's violent, it's extraordinary, and it's very erotic.
Yes. Well, in the script it basically said, two guys with knives come in and there's a fight. And then it's left to everybody else to make that work. And it was obvious. I mean, the rationale for being in the bathhouse is that the criminals are going to do some business with each other for the first time. They don't trust each other. They want to see each other's tattoos. Mm-hmm. They want to see where each other came from and whether they should trust each other. And then there's a moment of betrayal, and then Vigo's character, Nikolai, has to fight for his life against two Chechens who are fully clothed, who come in with knives. And, of course, it's the knives that make the difference. I mean, they want to carve up his tattoos. And it's interesting that there are no guns in the movie at all, which is not perhaps realistic for England these days. Perhaps in the past it was, but not now. Guns are everywhere. But These are killers who want to make a point, and they are willing to undertake the intimacy that a knife murder would involve. I mean, if you kill someone with a knife, you have to get very close to them, you have to feel them, you're going to smell them and hear them and touch them, and in its intimacy, it's very intimidating and terrifying, and would send a message, of course, to the bosses who run Nikolai as a character.
This is a podcast from BBC Radio's news and sports station,
5 Live.
To find out more about 5 Live and its sister service, 5 Live Sports Extra, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5Live.
David, as a Canadian, can I ask you your thoughts on Neil Young, please?
Well, he's a classic Canadian rocker. What can I say?
Have you always liked him?
Yes, actually. Yeah. I've never met him personally, so I can't say anything about him as a person.
Because Mark, I've worked with Mark for many years, and he's always slagged me off for liking Neil Young.
Well, you're right, and he's wrong.
Exactly. Hang on. Stop.
There's a punchline.
Stop. Could you just say that again, please, David?
You're right, and he's wrong.
Right. Okay. Because in the very, very recent history of movies, what was that movie that you saw, the Neil Young movie?
Heart of Gold.
Jonathan Demme film. And all of a sudden, Mark came to a realization that, as you just said, David, I've been right all along. And you had like a conversion experience, and there you were on television last Saturday, Mark, with your new hero, Neil, who was clearly baffled by your conversion.
No, it was very simple. I hated Neil Young. I went to see Heart of Gold. In the middle of Heart of Gold, I realized that I was being completely right. I literally burst into tears. I was completely overwhelmed. And then I had the opportunity to interview Neil Young a couple of weeks ago, and I fessed up. I just said, look, I hated you for this stuff for ages, and then I realized I was completely wrong, and I think you're a... And he was very friendly, obviously...
It would have probably been good if you had burst into tears at that moment.
Yeah, unfortunately, that didn't happen at exactly that moment. I think emotional responses in the cinema are, sort of sneered at. I think people often don't like to say, I was genuinely frightened or I was genuinely upset. In fact, I think, to bring this back to your films, I think one of the interesting things about your entire back catalogue is that it's been met in the past with a strange mix of admiration on the one hand from, I come out of a horror background, obviously for a long time, it was great support from the horror fans, and also revulsion from some people you had trouble with the censors. I mean, people will remember that when you were here in, I think it was 98 for the London Film Festival with Crash, and then there was suddenly, we were told that Crash was the end of civilization.
Beyond depravity, I think is the phrase.
Beyond the bounds of depravity, and you were probably still aware that in Westminster, I think we're in Westminster now, it is still not legal to play Crash in a cinema.
Yeah. There are a lot of criminals in Westminster, of course, as a result.
As a result of not playing Crash.
Well, as a result of clandestinely playing Crash on their VCRs.
So there is this extraordinary thing that I think what your movies do is they do. There's so much they're about bodies and they're about things which perhaps people wouldn't like to talk about immediately, but they provoke very visceral, very physical reactions, very emotional responses. And occasionally, I think some critics are simply sideswiped by them.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting. We should put all those critics on a plane and have them watch. I'm just noticing and talking to some other people who've had the same reaction that a movie that perhaps you would be very cool to on the ground. When you're watching it on an airplane with the thrumming of the motors and the compressed air and so on, things suddenly become much more emotional and strange on an airplane. So I've had that experience too. A movie that I would probably have great disdain for on the ground, I find myself weeping over in an airplane. I don't know whether it's because you're constantly fearing for your life or what it is, but seeing movies on an airplane is actually quite a different experience. I mean, a lesser one in some ways, but weirdly more intense in others. I thought I'd just throw that in.
It ought to be said, though, Mark does cry at almost anything. I think he cried at A Bug's Life, you know, so it's not...
Well, that is a...
I didn't cry at A Bug's Life. You're misinterpreting. What I said was I cried in The Exorcist. I cried at the end of The Exorcist. I thought it was very moving, but there you go. It's because it's a, you know, it was a spiritual moment for me. What can I say?
David, while we have you with us, is this true that the word of The Fly being turned into an opera?
That is correct. Another transformation for The Fly.
Yeah,
I just spent 5 days in Paris at the Theatre Le Châtelet. Directing singers for the first time in my life and saying very naive things to them since I've never done that before, like, can you sing while you're hanging upside down from the ceiling? You know, things like that, because I don't know. It's a whole new world for me, the opera world. Howard Shore, who did the music for the original movie, for my version of the movie, has written the music, and David Henry Wong, who did M. Butterfly, has written the libretto. And we're going ahead. It will be at Le Châtelet in Paris in July 08, and then it will go to Los Angeles for the L.A. Opera Company because it's a co-production between those two companies.
There is, of course, there's a great history of film directors.
You've got 5 seconds.
Ken Russell, William Friedkin, yourself.
Yes, that's right.
Who else can there be?
Well, there's Woody Allen and Terry Gilliam as
there
well.
We go.
And that was David Cronenberg, Mark Kermode, and it was an extra film bonus podcast for you.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.